ancient. Yet it talked of the pyramid, and it spoke of the pyramid as a temple of light. It called it the Pillar of Enoch, which is interesting. And it postulated that these pyramid passages were designed to show the progress of the human soul toward a kind of redemption or ultimate purpose. Under the control of evil, man is descending. But at this point, the pyramid books of the dead in Egypt call this the Hall of Truth in Darkness. Now, where do they get this information? And by the way, this would be the same information that Moses would have studied. And then, as this ascending passage reaches a certain point, it opens into what's called the Grand Gallery, that if you go up this passage, you have to stoop, because it's narrow, and you have to bend over. But it opens into a passage you can stand up in that opens 286.1 pyramid inches taller. Now, the interesting thing about the pyramid is that you have socket stones that tell you the architect's original plan. But for some reason, they built the pyramid just a little off of the original plan. Exactly 286.1 pyramid inches short in circumference. And as a result, when you get to the top of the pyramid, it wouldn't hold the cornerstone. The cornerstone overhung. 286.1 inches would be the way the cornerstone would overhang. That error is built into the pyramid. Not only was it shrunk, so to speak, 286.1 inches in circumference, but the passage was off-centered to the left, 286.1 inches. Now, those who interpret these passages as having prophetic meaning and having a message say, to go left is to go in error. The Latin word sinister, the Latin word for left, is the word from which we get sinister. So to go left is wrong, and to go down is wrong, and to go up is right, and to go right is right. And to shrink is away from God, and to contract is bring you to God. The pyramid is shrunk 286.1 inches. The pyramid passageway is off center. That's why the Arab couldn't find it when he started pounding away and had to dig his way into the passage. He thought it'd be dead center, but it's 286.1 inches off. When you come up to this passage that expands upward, it's exactly 286.1 inches. And I might be ahead of the story and say when you get into the king's chamber, you have to turn right to get to the coffin of meaning, 286.1 inches, to bring yourself back into center. And the exact center of the pyramid. Now, these all have meanings, and I'm way ahead of my story tonight. I just want to make a simple point. If those who've studied the pyramid, and there are some geniuses, including royal astronomers of Scotland, are correct, Omni obviously is wrong, because they say, Omni said, Dick Walker, that 2800 was the date. Well, if he doesn't even know within 800 years what the date is, to prove that Thuban isn't shining down this passage in 2800, I got news for him. It wasn't shining down this passage in 2142 or 2140. Only 1 year it did it, 2141 B.C. Now, they call the stoop portion, the Hall of Truth and Darkness, they call this the Hall of Truth and Light. Now, there's some interesting dates when you begin to study it. From the benchmark date to exactly the turn-up of the passage, the inches bring us in years to 1453 B.C. Archaeology and history is now confirming that that's a more accurate date for the exodus from Egypt. You then count the inches as you go up. You come to a point where this opens up 286.1 inches exactly. That just happens to be 33 A.D. Now, if you extend this floor of the Queen's Chamber, which is very important, it's a little lower than the actual floor because you climb up a step here. If you extend that floor, which has very significant meaning that I'm not teaching about tonight, and have it extended, it cuts a little slice in the floor of the passage. Let me see if I got a little picture of that, because I'm trying to show up. Here's a close-up. See, the Queen's Chamber floor, if you extend it with dotted lines, it's a little lower than the actual floor because there's a step right there. If you extend that right on out, it will hit a point on the ascending passage a little earlier than if you drop a perpendicular line from where the passage opened up. Now, let's see if I can find a picture that shows that. Yeah, here it is. If you extend the Queen's Chamber floor level right over here, it will hit exactly 2 BC. So a triangle is formed by extending that Queen's Chamber floor to hit 2 BC and drop a perpendicular line down from the opening of the passage that begins the Grand Gallery, and it hits at 33 AD. So you have what's called the Christ Triangle built into that. At this area right here, by extending the Queen's floor, you end up with a little triangle that hits on the pyramid inches that have moved up the chamber, 2 BC and 33 AD. Now, for years, they argued Jesus was born 4 BC because of a misinterpretation of a statement by Josephus about a certain eclipse that occurred in Herod's reign. Modern history has proven and corrected all that, that that was an error. And the current decision about the birth of Christ that the authorities are behind is 2 BC. And not at Christmas, by the way, but in the fall. Now here... What are we laughing at?
I'm sorry. I'm just thinking how you're blowing
your mind. Oh, no, no. Jesus wasn't born at Christmas. He wasn't born at Christmas. He was born in the fall. You can prove that from the New Testament. We can figure out what course in the temple the father of John the Baptist was serving. When the angel spoke to him, Jesus was born 6 months after John. That we know very clearly from Scripture. We can figure that when John was born, and it forces Christ's birth in the fall. Nobody ever thought he was born at Christmas until they decided in Rome that there was a party going on because of the Saturnalia on the 25th, and if you can't whip them, join them. So Christ's Mass was joined to the 25th. But the pyramid has always shown Christ's birth 2 BC, or some very important event, and the death and resurrection that suddenly opens up this gallery 286.1 inches, 33 AD. Now, isn't that interesting? You keep following it. I can plot spots in Paul's life, which is what I do when I'm teaching on it. You go on up here, you hit the great step in the 1800s. You climb that great step, and then you start going through passageways and into this pyramid. First passage just happens to hit when the World War One opens, and you come out of it when World War One ends. Then you go into the map room of the antechamber, and when you get in this passage, you go into that passage when the Great Depression begins, and you happen to come out of it just exactly when the Great Depression ends. Now, that fascinates me. It really fascinates me. How those markings could all come out like that. Now, I already read Isaiah 19, in that day there shall be an altar to the Lord, last days in the center of Egypt and at the border thereof. I've already pointed out, if you do the numerical value of those Hebrew words, they come to exactly the number of pyramid inches, 5,449, which is about as broad a base clue as to the pyramid being that monument. Now, what could Isaiah possibly be meaning in the 19th chapter? Has God encased a message in stone? Hey, I'm a pastor, a historic churchman. Always have been. Pastor of Church of Congregational Polity of 39 years duration in the same city. I was elected 10 years ago. But this pyramid fascinates me. How do they know all this? How were they able to build this, line it to true north, encase all of these truths about astronomy in it before man was supposed to know about it, and put a passageway in it that those outside of the sphere of revelation and the Egyptian Book of the Dead said that it was a prophetic pattern of the passage of the soul of mankind to its ultimate destiny. Now, beginning in the mid-1800s, the archaeologists and astronomers have uncovered. Now, a couple of people were foolish. Davison was the first one. He went down to prove that there was no message in the pyramid. Like Frank Morrison, who set out to prove that the miracles of the New Testament didn't really happen. An attorney, and he ended up writing the greatest proof of the resurrection in the book, Who Moved the Stone? Davidson went to the pyramid to prove there was no message in it, ended up writing the greatest proof, and he got so carried away that he even set the date for the world end. Well, he was wrong. And because he was wrong, people then said it was all a bunch of nuttiness and turned off on it. Adam Rutherford resurrected it with his four-volume series. And then he made the same mistake because the floor changed from one kind of stone to another kind of stone. He decided that was the end of the world. And he set the end of the world in 1979. And when it didn't happen, everybody got turned off on the pyramid again. How many people have taken the Bible and set dates for the end of the world? James, the brother of the Lord, almost made that mistake. Augustine came close to making that mistake. And there have been nuts throughout the history of the church that have taken the Bible and set a date. I remember one of the most famous evangelists in America was down here in Southern California. And they had set a date for the Lord's return. One old lady was sitting on the hood of her Cadillac expecting it to happen. What a way to go is right. Now, you don't throw the Bible out just because people have misinterpreted it. This thing fascinates me. So I decided to teach on it and research it and say, hey, just maybe God has always had a message for every age. Just maybe he had a message for the scientific age of which we're a part. A message encased in stone. It doesn't depend upon translation. Doesn't depend upon words. A pyramid inch is a pyramid inch. And he built that measurement into the diameter of the earth. Just maybe God laid all this pattern down, who's in control, so he could say at the end of time, as this monument sits, this witness pillar sits in the center and at the border of Egypt, I told you so. Now who built it? I mean, somebody was a real genius that built it. Now, in the records of Josephus, first century, Josephus said that the descendants of Seth, knowing that a destruction was coming on the earth, built two monuments to encase their knowledge for future generations. One of brick over the Euphrates River, one of stone in the land of Sirius, Egypt, that worshiped the dog star Sirius. Josephus said the one of brick had since disappeared, but in his day, first century, he said the one of stone was still standing. Is this it? Is this the monument that will enable God to say, I told you so? Well, we'll see, won't we? Now, this pyramid is fascinating. Now, I've brought my people to the great step and to a date in here and teaching on it. And people say, are you going to take us into the king chamber and see what's really revealed there? The answer is yes. When? Well, we'll see, won't we? Now, the reason I got on this, I said to myself, why don't I just make poor old Craig that has to go out and supply these things have a heart attack tonight. This is the way it looks when you come into the Grand Gallery. It suddenly lifts up. Instead of having to be stooped over, you go up. Do you realize that's there today? The Grand Gallery is lifted up 286 pyramid inches. Here's another view of the Grand Gallery. You come out of the little stooped over hall of truth and darkness. Now, the whole position of pyramid theorists on this, the sane people and not the nuts, is that we have encased in this pyramid a benchmark that's a starting point that gives the date of Exodus, man on his fall, but that is blocked by a granite plug because only a miracle could deliver him, which is true of the miracles as they came out of Egypt. This is the hall of truth and darkness, or the truth under law. You have to walk stooped over. But along comes this little Christ triangle that marks in stone the date of his birth and the date of his resurrection. And at his resurrection, this hall opens up 286.1 inches, curing the displacement factor. And you now walk the hall of truth and light with grace available on up toward the king's chamber. Now, interestingly enough, you take that Christ angle, which is a certain angle, but I've already drawn it. It's an exact angle that marks the spot 2 BC and 33 AD. You lay that pyramid, or you lay that triangle on the north side of the pyramid. Just put that angle right here, like that, on the north side of the pyramid. And you run a rum line all the way across the country to the northwest. Maybe there's a picture of that here. It will carry itself. Yeah, there is. My cracky. You lay that angle on the north face of the pyramid and extend the hypotenuse of that triangle as a line straight. And just keep going as a rum line. It'll hit Bethlehem right dead on the nose. Isn't that interesting? Now, this is not in the book. If you go up here to England that has the inch, that's the same as the pyramid inch, and you go to Stonehenge, and you take the marker stones in Stonehenge, 91, 92, 93, 94, you take those marker stones, you take the northwest one and the southeast one, and you run a rum line. I'm not drawing it true. You keep that rum line that connects those two stones just going all the way from Stonehenge, and just carry that rum line, it'll hit the pyramid dead on the nose. Now, how do they line this thing up true north, incorporate all the measurements of the earth, move those stones of 70,000 pounds, fit them so tightly that it takes optical instruments to make cuts like that today, pour 36 square feet of cement to hold them together, how to get them there in the first place and lift them, and then all these angles built in that hit dead on the nose at Bethlehem and dead on the nose, the marker stones of Stonehenge. And you tell me that man was a caveman, had a bellyache and had fallen out with his wife and pulled her by the hair outside and said, "You watch me show off," and started taking his club and knocking rocks around and just lucked this whole thing out. You see, man was very smart once, got dumb, and we're starting to get back a little bit. That's the biblical view of man, that we were very smart once and got dumb and came back. Now, it's Sunday night, so I'm getting very religious. This subject fascinates me, and I'll be teaching on it. Not tonight. All I did tonight was bait you, hopefully. But when I get around to teaching on it, it might be much easier if you've got these diagrams and things in a book. Here, for example, you get to the top of the gallery and it shows the way into the king's chamber. This just happens to perfectly mark out the First World War, and this perfectly marks out the Depression, and you keep going, you hit the wall right here at a certain date, and then you turn right to go into the king's chamber, which is laid out. I'll find a layout of the king's chamber. Here, this will do it. Not very good, but as you come in, for example, you have to turn right 286.1 inches to correct to get to the central part of the pyramid, and that's where the coffin is. It was supposed to have a body in it, but didn't. It has exactly the same cubic space. Isn't that funny? That this coffin in the king's chamber has exactly the same cubic space as the Ark of the Covenant. How in the world did that happen? These old cavemen just guessed that out. Now, there's just too much here for me to ignore. I mean, you know, you can say stupid if you want to be, but I don't want to be stupid. Is this possibly that marker that Josephus was talking about and Isaiah was talking about, where God, I believe in the written word of God, I believe the eternal word became the living word, became the spoken word, became the preached word, became the written word of God. I believe that that controls. But I also know God wrote his message in the stars. And astronomy has been frowned upon by some Christian thinkers when God wrote his message in the stars. And you can trace it from the lying virgin of Virgo laying down to Leo the lion killing the serpent through the constellations of the heavens. God wrote his message in the stars. God wrote his message in human flesh as he sent his son to strike a tent, as I said earlier, of human flesh. God should be writing his message today in the church. If we could get off of some of the negative stuff onto the positive work of God's grace in us. And God, did he write his message in stone for those of that bent of mind, so God could say, I told you so, and you're without excuse if you didn't listen to me. Now, are you interested in this book?